Blog Talk Radio.
It's Film Festival Radio, the show where superstars and future stars happily coexist together. And now, here's your host, Janice Malone.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Film Festival Radio Show with me, Janice Malone. Of course, we are always happy to have you join us on board here. And we have been doing this show for a long time here. 2007, we just had an anniversary of our show. Our anniversary was in December. Yeah, just a couple of months ago, actually. And we started in 07, and so we're still here. We are still here, and we're here because we have wonderful listeners and celebrity guests, and people who are famous, some are not so famous, but are on their way to becoming famous. So, like I always say on our tagline, this is the show where superstars and future stars happily coexist together. And I'm also happy to report that we have had people on as guests who have gone on to not quite reach the superstar status, but they have found success. And they have written us and said thank you for the times when they were on the show. And it did help them because it got them, you know, other radio and television appearances as well. So we're happy we were just a little fraction of their success, if any at all. But anyway, to further speak of emails and such, feel free to drop us a line, info@filmfestivalradio.com. And that's info@filmfestivalradio.com or filmfestivalradio@gmail.com. And we will definitely answer you back, because we're nice people. Yes, we really are. Okay, let's talk about today's show here. Very fascinating information, especially from our first guest who will be calling us shortly. I'll tell you about that in a minute, but I'll tell you more about first our second guest. These are some guys, and they're very, very funny gentlemen. They are comedy duo, and they are on their first national comedy tour. Yes, these guys, you just got to listen to their backstory. Okay, these Cody Coe, K-O, and Noel Miller, these guys used to be former software engineers. Nice, rock solid job, 401k, health insurance, all that great perk stuff. But you know something? They were not really happy. I'm sure they were happy to have employment, but that was not their calling. No, they walked away from their nice cushy jobs and say, hey, we're going to follow our dreams, and that is to be comedians, stand-up comics. And so that's what they did. They launched their own podcast, the Tiny Meat, M-E-A-T, Tiny Meat Gang, late last year, so this has not been long started. And January last month, they started on a national tour, and they have had all of these sold-out engagements. Yes. In fact, these guys are so good. They will be performing at this huge Nashville Comedy Festival. And if you don't know about the Nashville Comedy Festival, then just go Google it. It is huge. And how huge is it? Well, they have Jay Leno is coming this year. Is that big enough for you? Tom Segura, Ali Wong, this is just a few of many, but they will also have Cody Coe and Noel Miller, and they are our guest, and they will be joining us shortly to tell us more about how do you just walk away from a really secure job and throw the dice and let it ride on, you know, whatever is your lucky number. But those numbers are adding up to sold-out shows. They have their own mixtape. Yes, they have their own mixtape. I mean, they have a lot going on. So we're going to find out more about them shortly. But our first guest, who will be calling us in a few minutes here, her name is Amy Padnani, and she is from the New York Times. Make sure I've got her title correctly. She is the digital editor of the New York Times obituary section. Yes, Amy Padnani, and she will be joining us in a couple more minutes here, and she will be chatting with us about a very special project that the New York Times launched last year called Overlooked. And those of you out there may have already seen or read Overlooked, and for those of you who have not, I'll tell you more about it. Since 1851, the New York Times has been around a long time. Well, I mean, even before I was born, yes, I'm afraid so. It launched in 1851, the obituary section, and over the decades, thousands and thousands of obituaries have obviously been published, just talking about fascinating people and their legacies and what they left on Earth here, for the world to know about or enjoy. They were inventors or such. But most of those people were often white men who were featured in the New York Times obituary section. But that lies the situation as to why Overlooked, the project, was created. It was last year during Women's History Month that the Overlooked Project was born, so to speak. What they did was they added hundreds of stories about amazing, remarkable people who have since passed on. And it just acknowledges the work, the accomplishments, maybe, inventions or achievements that they have done, these people. And so the New York Times obituary section has created and they've listed these amazing, fascinating stories of remarkable people. And it proved to be such a big hit that for the month of February, they are now launching stories about a prominent group of Black American men and women for Black History Month. And same stories, oh my goodness, you should just go read it. We're going to ask Amy to give us more details, but the stories about some very it's not so much that they were rich or famous or anything like that. These were just people who were accomplished and extraordinary achievement. Maybe they broke records. Some broke color barriers. Some broke gender barriers that were not open to they were just open to men only. And women, these are women who broke gender barriers, African-American people who broke color and gender barriers. One in particular, African-American, Major Taylor, and he was a world champion bicycle racer. But he was a world champion bicycle racer. And he was known, and he competed in bicycle races around the world. Guess when this happened? 1898. He traveled as far away as Australia, and he became known as the Black Cyclone. That was his name when he was competing. He was the first African-American world champion in cycling, and he was the second Black athlete to win a world championship in any sport. He set all kinds of records, even when he was a teenager. It's just a fascinating story. But of course, he, because of racism and segregation, he was never recognized by so many, media places and such. But now the New York Times obituary section and the Project Overlooked has corrected that. Another lady, she was mentioned and written about in the Overlooked Women's History Project last year. Her name was, let me get her name here. Hold on. Emma Gatewood. I thought this was a really interesting story. Emma Gatewood, and they used to call her the hiking grandmother. And she was the first woman to hike the entire Appalachian Trail by herself in one season. And get this, when she did that, she was 67 years old. Yeah. Again, her story was profiled last year during Women's History Month. But again, you can go and read about all of these fascinating people, not only for Black History Month while we're still in February, but for any month since last year that they have featured outstanding men and women. And so that is why we're going to have Amy Padnani on the, again, the New York Times digital editor for the obituary section, because she was one of a part of the team that spearheaded and is spearheading this project. And I'm such a history buff. I just love that kind of stuff. So let's bring Amy on right now, and so that we can get more details about Overlooked. So let's switch over to Amy. Let's bring her on.
What an amazing project this is. How did this all originally come about? Just start from the beginning and as to how did it all fall into place.
Thank you so much. So Overlooked began shortly after I joined the obituaries desk at the New York Times in early 2017. At the time, the national debate on race was at a rolling boil with Black Lives Matter, and the Me Too movement was just starting to bubble up. And I noticed that readers would sometimes write to us to say, hey, why don't you have more women and people of color in your obituaries? And I thought, yeah, why don't we? And so I sort of tucked this thought in the corner of my mind. And one day when I was doing my day-to-day research, I came across an interesting website talking about the origins of tennis. And there's a woman named Mary Outerbridge who is credited with introducing tennis to America in 1874. And I thought, how neat is that? One of the biggest sports in America was introduced by a woman. And so I wondered if she ever got a New York Times obituary. Spoiler alert, she did not. So I thought, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said that's really interesting.
Yeah, and so I started coming across other interesting names in history, and I would jump into our archives to check, and if they didn't get an obit, then I would put them on a list. And eventually when I had a couple of dozen names, I talked with my editor, and we decided, you know, maybe there's something here. Maybe this is the time to tell their stories.
And you guys are doing a wonderful job in doing so. What type of feedback are you getting from readers?
Thank you so much. So when Overlooked first went up in March of 2018, I was not prepared for the response at all. It was really powerful. I had hundreds of emails from readers saying, thank you for doing this. For the first time, I feel like I'm seen. And, you know, I feel like these women finally have a voice. So it was definitely something that readers seemed to want. And we also put out a submission form for people to tell us who else we should do Overlooked obituaries on. And as of now, that has about 4,000 suggestions in it. So this series really has a lot of potential to go on.
And so this will be a series that will be just for February each year, or how do you guys plan on for the future?
Right. So we started in March of 2018 resurfacing the tales of women in history. And it had been going on for almost a year, and this February we decided to have a special section looking for Black History Month, looking at men and women who were forgotten from our pages. So the section came out on February 1st with obituaries for about a dozen people from Black History, and it's going to continue. Every week we're adding to the series for Black History Month, and then after that, the series will continue through the end of 2019, adding obituaries for other people who were left out of our pages.
So have you heard any responses or replies from some of the people that the obituaries, some of their remaining relatives or descendants?
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting is some of the descendants weren't even aware of the accomplishments of their family members. In one instance, there was Margaret Abbott. She was technically the first woman to win in the Olympics for golf, but she wasn't aware because the terminology sort of changed for what the game was called and how it was referred to in the Olympics. And so when the writer contacted a descendant, they actually didn't even know that she had accomplished this. So there are a lot of interesting things that we sort of dug up. And there was another instance where it was the woman was Bessie Stringfield. She was the motorcycle queen of Miami. And when we reached out to some of her nephews and great-nephews, they were really glad. They were in nursing homes themselves because Bessie's era was a long time ago. But but yeah, they just seem really touched to finally have their relatives be recognized.
So was it difficult finding, you know, background information, you know, even further information from what you originally found? I know you obviously would need more, but was that a difficult task to find additional information?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. Speaking of Bessie Stringfield, she apparently lied a lot about her life. And the reporter learned this when she was looking up for details on where she was born and, you know, what her background was. There were a lot of details that she fabricated and that were repeated in telling the sort of legend of her life. And the reporter uncovered all of this when she reached out to one of the best friends for Bessie, who's working on a book about her life. The best friend said, well, this is how she wanted to be known. But we actually thought, you know, we got the death certificate and other records to tell where Bessie actually came from. So that was an interesting example. And another that came up for me with Mary Outerbridge is the one who was credited with introducing tennis. I found out that around the time when she introduced tennis, the game was becoming popular elsewhere in America too. And when I contacted a tennis historian, he said, actually, there's at least six people credited with introducing tennis to America. We don't in fact know that Mary Outerbridge was the first. But we do know she was a pioneer for the sport, and she still left an impact. So we included her obituary, but it was really interesting to note how muddled these sort of details get with history and with time and, you know, the dust that settles over the records.
Was it difficult finding photographs?
In some instances, yes. Again, speaking of Mary Outerbridge, we had to go with kind of an illustration of her. One of the historians I talked to said he searched for 4 decades for a photograph of her, but one just did not exist. I mean, this is from the mid-late 1800s, so photography was still kind of emerging, and a lot of photographs are not available, or people would place a photo on the internet and say it was a certain person, and then that would get covered again and again and appear on lots of different websites, and we really have to do our due diligence and our research to make sure that the photograph actually was of that person. So yeah, the photos were a whole process in and of themselves. We had a team of researchers helping us with that.
Well, to further speak of books, this just sounds like this could be a wonderful book project, you know, multi-part, part 1, 2, 3, and 5, whatever. Are there any plans for a book?
I think down the line there might be. As of now, it's going to become a TV show. So details of that are still being worked out, but I think once we figure that out, then we're hoping a book can be next.
Oh my goodness.
So there have been a lot of inquiries. A lot of people are interested in seeing these put together in the compilation, and I'm hoping that will happen down the line.
Well, my goodness, let's just, you know, forget book for now. Let's go straight to television. That's wonderful. That is really cool. I know you can't give too many details, but any idea about a launch this year, next year for the television project or what?
I just know they're hoping to do it as soon as possible, but I have no idea about the ins and outs. I guess Hollywood works slowly.
Yes, but sometimes do. Okay. Well, okay. I think I've just about asked you enough here. Can you tell me about any upcoming other projects that you might be working on, you and your crew, or what?
There are definitely a few others in the works. We have a new archives team called Past Tense that kind of started out of this project. We're partnering with Google to dig up, excavate our archives to look for stories from our past. So we have this room in the basement next door, we call it the morgue, and there are just thousands and thousands of photographs and old articles and clippings and books and, you know, just so many materials that we're searching through to find out other interesting things about our past. You know, the New York Times began publishing in September 18th, 1851. So we have 168 years of history to look through. And so we found a lot of interesting things. The Past Tense team has come up with a few interesting projects so far that they've published. They did a 100th anniversary slideshow of Jackie Robinson's birthday using images we found from there. And they did a look at California from 3,000 miles away, how we covered it. So there are plans to do some more projects, and I'll be partnering with them on those.
Oh, man, you've got an exciting rest of the year, it sounds like, here.
It's a lot of fun. If you're a history buff, it's definitely exciting to look through and to see how society looks at the same things that we look at today, you know, and how we regard them now. It's very fascinating.
And so what is the direct link to websites that people can go directly to get more information and just to see, you know, the current project that you guys have put together?
Sure. You can see the current project at nytimes.com/overlooked, and there's also a link there to the submission form, so if people want to suggest other candidates for an Overlooked Obit, they're more than welcome to.
Oh, so you guys are still taking applications for new stories. Oh, that's good.
Absolutely. This project, as of now, there's no end to it in sight. There's so many fascinating people that we could write about. So, yeah, I say tell us. Keep telling us who else.
I've got the last question here. Someone wanted me to ask you this about being, you know, working in the Obit department and that whole, you know, just being an Obit writer, editor. They wanted to know, does that kind of writing, does it ever get depressing or boring for you?
Yeah, it's a question we get a lot. You know, people often say, oh my gosh, how did you end up on the obituaries desk? Did they dump you there? You must have been true, you didn't want to work there. And I thought, well, actually, no, it's a great job. We laugh every day because I think obituaries are more about the life than about the death. You know, there's only one sentence really in an obituary that says, you know, such and such person died, and this is the cause of their death. The rest of the obituary is really about all the things they accomplished and all of the contributions that they made to society. So really, most of the obituary is positive, if you look at it that way, or it's more of just a reflection on history. It's like a mini history lesson is how I look at it, or kind of a mini biography about a person. So it's not that morbid in my mind.
Well, I tell you, with projects such as Overlooked and now the Past Tense team, you guys are making the world of obituary writing kind of a hot trend thing to do nowadays here.
Yeah, a lot of people are fascinated with obituary writing. I think in many ways because it captures, you know, who gets remembered and how and what the time period was like for us. You know, it's a looking back at the world that we live in and the people who contributed to it and just the era, the time period. It's like a snapshot of a time maybe we once knew or a time we never knew.
Yeah, for sure. As I said, just kind of gave, you know, that whole world. You know, a lot of people, they say, oh, it's just too morbid and sad, but No, the, you know, with these projects here, it just kind of gives it a whole different outlook, kind of hip in a way.
Well, thanks.
Hip in a way.
I hope other people think that.
Yeah, you know, especially when you put, maybe because I'm such a history buff, you know, you guys are kind of putting a modern-day spin on it, you know, with the upcoming television show, then with, you know, all of the inquiries that people are writing you guys and asking questions and thanking you and such. It's just, it's not like it used to be. It's not like, you know, my grandmothers were alive and such.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. I think, when I read the old obituaries in the New York Times, the tone is very different. They're often a lot shorter. Sometimes you see these antiquated referrals to women calling them Mrs. John Smith instead of their own name. And it's really interesting to see how the New York Times has turned it into this art form with the style that we do day-to-day now for obituaries, and then to be able to apply that to the way used to do them by resurfacing these people in history. I think there's something about that that really fascinates people and gets them involved and curious and interested in their own past. And like you said, you know, there's an interactive element to this, and so many of the ones that we've done were actually suggested to us by readers, people who have inspired them in their own lives today.
Absolutely. Once again, thank you so much for the chat. It's been very enlightening for me, especially.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you have good questions. I appreciate that.
Okay, well, thank you again, and I will keep reading the New York Times like I've done for most of my adult life here, okay?
Excellent. Thanks. All right, take care.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, that is Amy Pednani, and she is, again, the digital editor of the obituaries section for the New York Times special edition of Overlooked. Is she and her team and her colleagues doing an amazing, wonderful job on presenting these stories. I have learned so very much. But yeah, you know, it seems like, you know, the way they're going about with these special projects, such as Overlooked, that writing obituaries is not a morbid thing anymore. And they're going to have a television show based off of Overlooked. Probably, I'm just guessing, probably kind of sort of like, you know, that show on PBS where they trace your lineage of your foreparents. I forgot the exact name of it, but it's Who Are You or Who Are Your Roots or something like that. And that sounds kind of sort of like the format they might use. I don't know, I haven't seen it yet, but hopefully when they get ready to launch the Overlooked television show, we will be able to get the host or maybe one of the producers on there to bring us some information about it. So before we get to our next guest, we're going to take a quick break here and remind you that you are listening to Film Festival Radio Show with me, Janice Malone. And as always, we couldn't do it without you. We'll be right back.
Sherry Shepherd, and you're listening to Film Festival Radio with Janice Malone.
Yes, you are. You're listening to me. If you want to drop us a line other than just listening, we do take emails. We love your emails. We love them so much. You can drop us a mail, email at info@filmfestivalradio.com. That's where we are. And our backup email address is filmfestivalradio@gmail.com. We're there too. We're all over the place. Okay, let's get to our next two guests. These guys are funny as in ha-ha. We're talking about the comedy duo of Cody Coe and Noel Miller. And as I said earlier, these guys were, I guess you, if you ever are a software engineer, you probably always will be deep down inside. But in their case, they were software engineers, but deeper within them were two funny guys who were trying to escape. And guess what? The two funny guys did escape. They just escaped last month so that they could do what they're now doing, which is making a lot of people laugh, you know, just bringing smiles to our faces. Oh, my goodness, do we ever need that? And they are on their first national comedy tour. It all started with their very popular podcast, The Tiny Meat Gang. Yes, so we're going to find out what and how they got that going. And if you have not tuned into it, just go Google Tiny Meat, M-E-A-T, Gang, G-A-N-G, Tiny Meat Gang, the podcast. And they have a lot of funny podcasts on there, and they have their own mixtape called Locals Only. They've got a lot going on. And again, not only is this their first national tour, they have already had several dates of the tour that have already sold out. Not bad for a couple of guys who just launched their national tour. Actually, their national comedy careers were just launched, 6 weeks ago? Barely. So this is, you know what that means? That means that if you have whatever dream you have, whether it's in entertainment, maybe it's to be an entrepreneur, maybe it's to go back to school, or whatever it is, go ahead. Maybe not quitting your job may not be, unless you've got a rich relative or got money saved up. But what I'm saying is, just like Cody and his comedy buddy Noel Miller, go ahead and just do it. Just start doing it. Just get out there. If you have to start it, 1 hour a week or 1 hour a month, do something. Don't just lie docile and do nothing. I think that's the moral of the story. But let's bring Cody and Noel on so that we can find out more about how all of this got started. And how did they just step out like that, quit some really good paying jobs and just like, bang, I want to make people laugh. And they're doing it. So let's bring them on. Open up the line and get them on right now.
Hello,
Jason.
I'm just anxious to talk to you guys. Your success story is just like one of those all-American dream come true type of success story. Do you feel that way or what?
Yeah, I guess a little bit. I don't know. It's still all pretty new to us, too.
Yeah, we hesitate to say because, we might get back and then everybody hates us. We have to find out.
No. I doubt that. So this is your first national comedy tour, first time. And you're already having these sold-out shows. I mean, when you first found out that your first show was sold out, what kind of celebration did that culminate to?
It was pretty surprising to both of us, to say the least. I remember, the day that the tickets went on sale, just for the whole tour. Pretty much the whole tour sold out within the first, 8 hours or something, and we were just, floored.
Yeah.
So it definitely was, pretty, a mixture of disbelief and excitement, for sure.
Yeah, you sell all those tickets, and then you're like, okay, now the show has to be really good.
That's pressure then, all of a sudden. So,
yeah.
So what city was it, was the first big sold-out show? What city was it?
Oh, the first, man.
The
first city that sold out. I don't actually recall because a couple of them sold out, simultaneously.
Oh,
I don't. I just remember I had stayed up all night working on a promotional video, and I uploaded it and I slept real late, and then I woke up at 11 and I just was reading emails that the whole thing had sold out.
Gosh, lucky you guys are. Well, okay, so you're on your first national tour here, but you guys, you were software engineers, and we think about software engineers, we just think about these really smart, smart people who are usually not funny, but you guys broke that image. So, what was first for you guys? Were you already funny, and then you later became interested in comedy, or vice vice versa?
I definitely was a jokester. I was always kind of a fine.
Okay. Did you guys already know each other before you, or did you meet together on the job or what?
Yeah, we met through our job. We both ended up working at a company called Fullscreen. And we actually were sitting right across from each other. We kind of knew of each other, like, through the internet. So it's kind of cool because we were like, wow, you're an engineer too.
And so, okay, so the Tiny Meat Gang podcast and all of its subsequent companies and projects was born when?
What was that last bit?
So when was it born and conceived?
When was it born?
Yeah.
There's actually, so I think it was about a year and a half ago now. There's like footage from a vlog that we did where we're like sitting outside on a picnic table at work, and one of us said Tiny Meat Gang, and it was like just a joke. We thought it was funny, and then for some reason we just used that name for some reason, and then it turned into something way bigger than we ever thought it would.
And now look at you now. It is huge. I was looking at your page there for the Tiny Meat Gang podcast, and I see where you guys have your own mixtape, Locals Only. So how did that all come about?
So we did like a smaller project last year. Basically, we had made a song as a joke about a year ago, and a producer reached out to Cody and said, "Hey, man, let me make your next song with Noel." And he's an accomplished guy. He's Diamond Pistols. He's got some, you know, big releases, and it's just his straight up profession. So we met with him, and we did a song called Super Zan, and it was a lot of fun. And from there, we said, "Hey, well, why don't we try to do a small music project?" And that was called Bangers and Ass. And then the next year we thought, well, we should just try to do it again. And so we made Locals Only. And also a good friend of ours named Spock, who's a DJ, he helped us make both projects as well. And music, I don't know, it's just fun for us just because it's there's no pressure when we do it, and we can purely have fun. So we like doing it.
How is it catching on with your fans?
They love it. Yeah. They all really, really like it, which is surprising. They all want us to perform songs on this tour, and we're like, no, this is about comedy, not music.
You guys have got to do a set. Maybe that'll be the follow-up tour, the music.
That's what we're thinking. We keep pitching that to the audience, and they love it, so we'll see.
Okay. Cody and Noel, the music tour. Well, that's too plain of a title, but we know what you. I was looking at the episode, your first episode while you were on tour, the Chen Weave Shop. We want people to go listen to it. Let's give this a preview. What's a Chen Weave Shop?
We went to Portland and we noticed that everybody had really nice beards, so we were joking that we needed to get a chin weave, kind of like a hair weave, because we can't grow beards, so we just wanted to fit in.
Oh, okay. Portland. I don't know how guys, they must be drinking something special, I don't know, but you're right.
I know, it's awesome. I can't grow a beard like that.
Yeah. I wonder how long does it take to grow a beard like that. You guys should bring on one of those Portland serious chin beard dudes or whatever they call themselves.
You can be one of our crumbs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now, you guys are coming to Nashville. Is this your first time visiting Nashville? Have you been here before or what?
No. I actually went to Nashville like 3-4 months ago for the first time, and it was amazing. I loved it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I've never been. You guys gonna buy any cowboy boots or hat? No.
Yeah, we might get some new boots while we're down there.
Oh yeah, we're gonna be new boot goofing on stage for sure.
I would love to see that. And get you some hot chicken. You know that's the big thing here. You gotta get you some super hot chicken.
Okay, keep that in mind. Yeah, no, that much I do know about Nashville, so I'm excited to burn my mouth off.
Yes, they're on almost every corner, so you won't have problems finding them. Well, I gotta ask you this really fast. What was your reaction to you, from your family and friends? I mean, you guys had some really nice, stable jobs. You had health insurance and 401ks and all that, and you just said, hey, we're going to do comedy. We're out. Is that how it happened? How did you leave your comfy job?
Well, I mean, I think we're both relatively risk averse. Is that what I'm looking for?
Yeah.
Like, we both like to take risks, and we're both like pretty entrepreneurial. So I think it was like it was a calculated decision. It wasn't just like up and leaving software engineering. We made sure that we knew we were in a position where we could see ourselves succeeding before we like made the jump.
Yeah.
And we tried to play it well, but our parents are super supportive, so.
Yeah, 100%.
And what's been the reaction from your former coworkers and your bosses?
They're all really supportive. We see them every now and again, and yeah, they knew that we wanted to pursue comedy, so they're happy for us, and they only wish us the best. It's great.
That's good. That's very good. So has anybody asked for any free tickets?
what, anyone at work or any of our friends? Mean?
No, the co-workers.
Not yet.
Not yet. I mean, in engineering, your co-workers are, like, usually significantly, they got, like, kids and stuff. So as much as they'd love to come out and support you, their schedule sometimes don't allow for it.
Okay. I don't know any software engineer, so this is exciting for me to actually talk to two software. Well, I guess you guys are former software engineers now. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that just like with pro wrestling, have you ever noticed how, like, The Rock and all those guys, once you become a wrestler, it never gets out of their blood? So I guess that's the way software engineers are, or is that the way software engineers are?
Yeah, maybe. The problem is, like, with software, everything moves so fast that we've both been out of the game now for, like, a couple of years. I don't know if we'll ever.
Yeah.
But there's still that part of my brain that likes to code, for sure.
Okay, so it's still in the old DNA there. Well, guys, I do understand that you guys will be back in Nashville again for the Nashville Comedy Festival. Now, will you have a whole different show than what your own national tour is, or what?
I mean, we keep evolving the show every time we do it, and I think that's just going to be the trend, so... I think the structure of the show will be the same, but I wouldn't say that it would be 100% the same show. Every time we do it, we find little tune-ups and tweaks, just like any other stand-up, and I think it will always be on that path as long as we're doing this.
Well, maybe during the Nashville Comedy Festival, maybe you guys can, do Locals Only, do that song. Aha.
do what now?
Your Locals Only song.
Yeah, or maybe write some new music for the show.
Yeah, potentially write new music.
Well, here's my last question here. I was, again, at the Tiny Meat Gang podcast site, and you guys have this episode called Casting Couch Etiquette. What is casting couch etiquette?
Oh, man, here we go. Oh, man. This is going to get vulgar.
That's okay.
Basically, we were discussing the in pornographic media, we find that gentlemen have a certain roughness to them. And we were saying that they could be a little bit more respectful to the women offering their performances and services,
Okay.
Have a little bit more respect. You know, they're there to participate. They're as much a performer as this man. So this man doesn't need to, you know, make them feel bad for any particular reason. It's a partnership.
So they need to say things like, please, thank you, excuse me, is that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Learn a little bit of manners, you know?
Yeah, have some manners on the casting couch, you know?
Yes. Like, would you please lie on this casting couch? And can I please have sex with you?
Exactly.
100%.
You guys need to do an instructional video on this.
That's actually hilarious. Wow.
That would be so funny. Well, okay. This is definitely my last question. Do you guys now have groupies, your own groupies, or what?
Honestly, like, sort of. I don't know. It's weird. Some people come to, like, multiple shows and stuff like that, so.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say not yet. No. We definitely have some, like, super we're both in committed relationships. We're all right.
I know some here in Nashville. I could round some up for you if you, you know.
Oh, man.
Well, just let me know.
We'll let them know when we're hiring.
Okay. Yeah, these are kind of like girls that are like groupies, world travel. It doesn't matter. Bluegrass performers, comedians.
We're a little bit too old, honestly.
They can inquire with our tour manager.
Okay. I'm here to apply for the groupie because you get an old groupie job. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Okay, guys. I'm going to be looking for that casting couch etiquette video, instructional video, I should say.
We'll be sure to knock it out.
Please. But anyway, I have really had a ball chatting with you guys, obviously, here. So.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah, this was awesome.
Oh, yeah. And I want to talk to you again before you come for the Nashville Comedy Festival. You got to crank it up again. By then,
we'd love to.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of new stuff, and we're going to have some more fun. So thank you guys so much, and have fun when you get here tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We appreciate it.
Thanks for calling. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. All right. Thank you then. Bye-bye.
Okay, these guys, Cody and Noel, they are funny. So now you can see why they just said, hey, forget being a software engineer. Why can't we just go out here and be funny? And that's exactly what they did. And so, I'm really happy for them, as you should be as well. And again, go to their website, the Tiny Meat, M-E-A-T gang. It has every piece of information about where the tour is going, and their podcast as well. And tell them that you heard them on our show, Film Festival Radio Show. So thank you guys for joining us. And that's going to, are we done? Yeah, we're done. That's going to do it for this edition of Film Festival Radio Show. I want to thank Amy Padnani, the digital editor of the New York Times digital obituary section, I should say, for shedding some backstory information about the overlooked special project and its ongoing work that it will be doing. And again, as she said, if you know of someone who's passed away and they did achieve extraordinary, maybe they didn't win awards, maybe they just had a really good and interesting life that the public needs to know about and needs to be profiled in the New York Times obituary section. What an honor it will be for that person. So you can go to the New York Times and just look for the overlooked section and send them an email. I believe there's a form that you fill out. So, and then we'll look into it. So make sure you do that. And again, we want to thank Cody and Noel for joining us, the comedy team, as they trek the nation with their first annual, hopefully it'll be annual, national comedy tour. So that's going to do it for us on this edition of Film Festival Radio Show. Thank you for listening as always, and we'll see you guys in our next show. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Film Festival Radio with your host, Janice Malone. Be sure to download this and other episodes at filmfestivalradio.com.